Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Today we are reading from the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter number 2, Divinity and Divine Service, text number 10. Kamashyanendriya Pritir Labo Jiveta Yavata Jivasya Tatta Jigyasa Nartayascheya Karma Vihi. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Life's desires should never be directed toward sense gratification. One should desire only healthy life or self-preservation, since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. The completely bewildered material civilization is wrongly directed towards the fulfillment of desires in sense gratification. In such civilization, in all spheres of life, the ultimate end is sense gratification. In politics, social service, altruism, philanthropy, and ultimately in religion and even in salvation, the very same tint of sense gratification is ever increasingly predominant. In the political field, the leaders of men fight with one another to fulfill their personal sense gratification. The voters adore the so-called leaders only when they promise sense gratification. As soon as the voters are dissatisfied in their own sense satisfaction, they dethrone the leaders. The leaders must always disappoint the voters by not satisfying their senses. The same is applicable in all the other fields. No one is serious about the problems of life. Even those who are on the path of salvation desire to become one with the absolute truth and desire to commit spiritual suicide for sense gratification. But the Bhagavatam says that one should not live for sense gratification. One should satisfy the senses only in so much as required for self-preservation and not for sense gratification. Because the body is made of senses, which also require a certain amount of satisfaction, there are regulative directions for satisfaction of such senses. But the senses are not meant for unrestricted enjoyment. For example, marriage, or the combination of a man with a woman, is necessary for progeny, but it is not meant for sense enjoyment. In the absence of voluntary restraint, there is propaganda for family planning, but foolish men do not know that family planning is automatically executed as soon as there is search for the absolute truth. Seekers of the absolute truth are never allured by unnecessary engagements in sense gratification, because the serious students seeking the absolute truth are always overwhelmed with the work of researching the truth. In every sphere of life, therefore, the ultimate end must be seeking after the absolute truth. And that sort of engagement will make one happy, because he will be less engaged in varieties of sense gratification. And what that absolute truth is explained as follows in the next verse. Om Ajnanati Madanda Shaganamjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Padijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivishakam Vitam Cha He Krishna Kuruna Sindho Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kantarara Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshpadi Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hiri Priye Vanchaka Patarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanang Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, is it not a fact that everyone is looking for happiness? We are all seeking happiness in everything that we do, isn't it? Or is somebody seeking unhappiness? Is anybody running after unhappiness? Yes, give me unhappiness. I would like it very much. You please give me. No. We are all running after happiness. In everything that we do, we are looking, how can I become happy? How can I feel good? You see, that's what we're looking for. So the beauty of this Krishna consciousness process, this bhakti system, coming down in the ancient Vedic scriptures, some people say Hinduism, but actually that is a misnomer. The word Hindu is coined by the Muslims, actually. Not a word that's coming out of the, quote, Hindu culture, unquote. It's actually a word coined by outsiders to the Vedic culture. So Vedic culture or Vedic religion is more accurate, a more historically accurate term, the Vedic religion. Religion based on the Vedas, you see. So the Vedic religion or, quote, Hindu, quote, unquote, religion is based on this principle of not being carried away by sense gratification. Taking as much sense gratification as necessary, as stated here, jiveta, labha, labha, jiveta, yavata. Taking as much sense enjoyment as is necessary to preserve oneself. You have to stay healthy, you have to stay alive. So obviously you can't live out in the bushes with no food. It requires some preservation. The body requires preservation. That's our duty, actually. It's a body given by God. So we are meant to keep it healthy. But if we become carried away and we devote the whole life to pampering the body unnecessarily, actually it's unhealthy to do that. To overindulge the senses leads to so many problems: obesity, heart disease, etc. You see, so overindulging the body actually is very not good thing. Even modern day medical science recognizes you have to restrict yourself from unrestricted sense enjoyment. You have to restrain yourself. Of course, we didn't have to be told that by the modern doctors. We already knew that. It's been given to us by Veda Vyas thousands and thousands of years ago. Just take as much sense gratification as is necessary to be healthy, you see, energized. And then what you should do, then you should inquire about the Absolute Truth. Tattva jigyasa. We are actually meant to do that. You may say, well, I don't know, that doesn't seem very enjoyable to me. I'd rather just work hard and get more facility for material sense enjoyment. That makes more sense to me than inquiring about the Absolute Truth. Why do we feel that way? Why do we think that, you know, acquiring more money, more prestige, you know, more facilities for material sense gratification is the most important thing? It's because we've grown up in a culture which has miseducated us into thinking that I am this body. That's the illusion we're in. You can ask a child, are you a boy or a girl? And they say, oh, a boy, I'm a girl. But actually, that's not true. A Krishna conscious child will say, I'm neither, I'm not this body. This is just a covering, this is just a garment the spirit soul is wearing right now. I'm situated in a male body, or I, this, the eternal spiritual being, am presently situated by the laws of karma in a male or female body. You see, a Krishna conscious child will answer in that way. If one realizes I'm not this body, I'm actually part and parcel of God, and my happiness in life is to reestablish that loving relationship with God, that will give me unlimited pleasure, you see. If one realizes that, then one will naturally be able to, it won't be artificially restricting one's senses from sense gratification. It will just be a natural restriction. Why should I over-entangle myself in sense gratification, which is just diverts me from that which gives me unlimited pleasure? A Krishna conscious person derives unlimited pleasure. A true Hindu, you see, or a true Vedic, a Sanatan Dharmi, actually, the better word. A true Sanatan Dharmi, a true Hindu, you see, has no attraction whatsoever for sense gratification. Simply wants to develop love for God, that's all. Understand that this human life is achieved after many, many millions of births through the cycle of birth and death. In the Vishnu Purana, it is described there are 8,400,000 species of life. So to come to this human birth takes many, many millions of lifetimes. It's actually described as 400,000 different types of humans also. Of course, this description is not limited to the planet Earth. The modern day scientists think there's just a bunch of rocks out there, but actually there is some speculation there may be someone else out there, and they have powerful radio receivers monitoring outer space to see if any messages are coming in. But actually the messages have already come in. It's right here. They could save all of the millions and billions of dollars they're spending on trying to receive the messages from outer space. They just have to pick up the Bhagavatam. The message has already come. Why are you not listening? You see? From that spiritual world, Tene Brahma Hridayadi Kaviye. Have you not read the first canto, first chapter, text number one of Bhagavatam? The beginning of the universe, this knowledge was introduced into this universe from beyond this universe. They're simply looking within this one particular universe. The scientists have such a small, pea-brained vision of reality, you see, that they think this universe is everything. They don't realize that inside this huge, vast outer space, beyond it, there's so many thick, thick coverings. Each covering is 10 times the space itself. The first covering is 10 times as big as the space that we see that we call outer space. And the next covering is 10 times more than that, and there's 7 covering. So it's like a huge, thick shell with a little tiny space in the middle. And that's what we call the universe, a little tiny space in the middle. That for us is the universe, with all the millions and billions of planets. And there are millions and billions of such universes clustered together like bags, like mustard seeds in a huge bag of mustard seeds. And that huge conglomeration of material universes is simply sitting in one corner of the vast, unlimited spiritual sky. This is Vedic cosmology. This is real. It's not simply myth. Sometimes they say, oh, the Hindu myth. I like our Hindu mythology. It is very nice. But wait a minute. The British came and said, this is mythology. Because they wanted to discredit it. This is Vedic history, not Vedic mythology. Itihasa. You know the Sanskrit language. The words there, itihasa, means it is historical. Itihasa. It is history. Just like this Mahabharata, it is history. Mahabharata means Greater India. Just like you have the phone book, Austin phone, it says Greater Austin because it includes Round Rock, you see, Pflugerville. This is called Greater Austin. Maha Austin. You see, Maha means greater. So Mahabharata, India is Bharat, and Mahabharata means the Greater India. So this Mahabharata is history of the Greater India. It goes beyond just that one little area. It goes far, far beyond. You see, Mahabharata. So from these historical descriptions, we can understand that the Hindu culture, Vedic culture, was based on this principle of vairagya, detachment from sense gratification, not artificial, that I want to enjoy my senses and I have to restrain them like somebody who weighs 250 pounds and is trying to lose weight on a crash diet. You know, they want to eat and they're just going crazy. They want to eat and they can't because the doctor said you can't eat except one salad every day with a few chickpeas, and they're just dying for ice cream. You see, it's not like that. In the Hindu culture, the Vedic culture, in the real days of Vedic culture, you see, when it was actually flourishing. In those days, people were so happy to hear and chant the glories of Allura. They could go on for hours and hours and hours. In total bliss. And there was an artificial restraint. They weren't artificially restraining their senses. They were just enlivened to connect with their spiritual identities, to hearing from the spiritual master, hearing from the Vedic literatures, etc. So this Krishna consciousness movement is reviving the real Hinduism, you see, the real spirit of Vedic culture. This is a revival of that spirit. To bring us back to that position of absorption in Krishna Katha, the topics of Allura. Krishna says, Machchita Madgata Prana Bodhyantak Parasparam Kathayantashtamam Nicham Tachanticha Ramanticha. The thoughts of my devotees dwell in me. Their lives are surrendered unto me. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss enlightening one another and conversing about me. So this Krishna consciousness movement is reviving that nectarian activity known as Krishna Katha. Nowadays, there's so many thousands of temples in India. People come for a little darshan, a little prasad, and then go home. So this, but that is not Hindu culture. That is not Vedic culture. Real Hindu culture, real Vedic culture is you go and you hear from the sadhus. You see, that is actual Vedic culture. In fact, there is an injunction like that in the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam says like that. What is that verse? Yashatma buddhi kunape dhidhaduke svadhi khalatra dishu boma ijade. Yatirta buddhi la saline nakarhachid janeshva vigeshu sa eko gokaraha. One who considers this bodily bag made of three elements, namely mucus, bile, and air, to be the self, who considers his family members to be those persons who are related with his physical body, who considers the place of his birth to be a holy dham, holy tirtha, because he was born there. And who goes to the holy place simply for a little darshan or to take a bath and then go home without being eager to hear from the sadhus. Bhagavatam says, sa eva gokara. Such a person is a cow or an ass. So, Hindu culture doesn't mean to become a cow or an ass. Vedic culture does not mean to be cow or ass. That I simply go for a little darshan, and now I'm a very good Hindu, I will go home and watch videos, because I'm a very good Hindu. No. Actual Vedic culture, Hindu culture, is to dive deeply into this ocean of the topics of God. That is actual Hindu culture. Satatam kirtayanto mam. Krishna says, always being absorbed in hearing and chanting my glories. So, the devotee, the actual follower of the Sanatana Dharma, the actual follower of this Vedic culture, he or she arranges their life in such a way that they're always connected with Krishna at every minute. Krishna, Vishnu, Ram, you see, Supreme Lord, Nrisimha. They arrange their life in such a way that they're always hearing about, remembering, and chanting the glories of God. They arrange it. So 24 hours a day, they're always doing that. They understand, this is my actual duty in life. Now it's come to think, well, your duty in life is to support your family, not your duty in life. No. Do you think supporting your... Of course, nowadays, the economy, the world situation is so difficult. If you can put bread on the table, if you can put chapatis on the table, you're considered to be a great hero. Actually, if you can put a roof over your family's head and put chapatis and rice and dal on the table, you're considered a great hero in today's society. Oh, he's a great hero. He's supporting his family. He's not a great hero. He's supporting a family. Wow. I mean, that's how bad the world situation is. If you can even do that, you're considered a great hero. But actually, the animals are doing that. According to their standard, they're also doing. The bird, he is also going out. He is gathering, he's going to the office or the factory for gathering, his own version of the office or factory. He's going out and gathering worms and bringing them back to the nest, his suburban home. You see, you have your nest in suburbia, the bird has his nest in his suburbia. What's the difference? If all you're doing is building one nest and bringing worms, then how are you any better than a bird? How are you any better than a bird? And that's all we train our children to do. Go to school so you can learn how to, get a good job and make money. That's the extent how we train our children in the material society. That's how we're training them. Is to be birds. Learn how to build nests and gather worms, and you're a very good human being. But no, that is animal existence. That is simply animal existence. Human life begins, atato brahma jigyasa, when one inquires, what is the nature of that absolute truth? That is when human life begins. That is actual Hinduism, or Vedic religion. To inquire, who am I? Where have I come from? What is my duty? What is my destination? How can I get there? Who can reveal it to me? How can I achieve it? This is human life, you see. This is human life. So in this Krishna consciousness movement, we have been blessed by one of the greatest teachers in the history of the world, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. With that science, that Vedic science, in every detail of the theoretical and the practical aspects. Every detail Srila Prabhupada has given us so that we can know perfectly what is the science of reviving our lost relationship with God and know the method, the techniques of how to do it. This is spiritual technology. You see? This is spiritual tech. This is actual high tech. High tech means that which gets you high. Technology that gets you high. That is high tech. So this technology of the soul, described in the Bhagavad Gita, which is the preliminary study, and the advanced study, which is the Bhagavatam, this is the technology which will actually deliver the living entity from his entanglement within this material modes of nature. Karma, chakra. Right now, we are being carried by the karma chakra. We are going for a joyride. I say that sarcastically. On the karma chakra. Being carried, you know. Round and round the wheel goes. Wherever she stops, nobody knows. See, we don't know where we're going to end up in the law of karma. It's you never know. The laws of karma carry you this way and that way. It may be a good thing, it may be a bad thing. Your karma is there, what you can do. As long as we remain on this platform of material sense gratification, we will be, in fact, carried along by karma, and there's nothing we can do about our destiny. It's just karmically determined. If you would prefer to be the architect of your own destiny, then inquire into the spiritual nature of the self, because by reviving the spiritual consciousness, which is dormant in the heart at the present moment, then you become you conquer over your karma, actually. You can rise beyond your karma by the grace of Krishna. Krishna says that. He says, Mokshiyashami, what is that? Sarvapapebhyo, Mokshiyashami. I deliver you from all that pop, all your karmic reactions. I deliver you from it. So if you would like to become free from the actions and reactions of this material nature, which means sometimes you enjoy a little bit and then you suffer, and sometimes you get a little enjoyment, again suffering, sometimes enjoyment and then suffering. If you're tired of this syndrome, which is ironically, it's a syndrome, S-Y-N, D-R-O-M-E. It's also a syndrome, S-I-N. It's a result of sin. The syndrome. You see? By our sin, we are caught up in the syndrome of material existence. Sin, in Spanish language, sins, means without. So, it is very good. Also, in German language, it comes from absund. There's some etymological interesting things happening there too, how to be separated from in German language. So, sin means that which separates you or makes you without God. That's the meaning of sin. Anything which separates you from God, that is sin. That is sin. So this is the proper understanding of morality. That our happiness in life is to be connected with God at every minute. That is our happiness in life. So if something stands in the way, that is called sin. Something that stands in the way of something that breaks the connection with God, that tears us away from God, that makes us devoid of God or without God, that is sin. Simple. It's very simple understanding. So we have to analyze everything that we're doing throughout our day, in our evening, and throughout our 24 hours, we have to analyze, is this connecting me with God or is this separating me from God? This activity, this thought, this word, this deed, is it connecting me with God or is it separating me from God? We have to be introspective. This is called Hinduism or Vedic religion. You have to see everything that you're doing. Is it connecting me with God or is it separating me from God? You see? This is the actual meaning of this Vedic culture of India. How to connect with God at every minute. So the first step is described here. Jivasa tattva jigyasa, to inquire about the Absolute Truth. A living being inquires about the Absolute Truth. Are there any questions on what we've discussed thus far? Question?
So you mean to say one should not earn money and livelihood because otherwise they'll become like animals?
We have explained very clearly, I hope no one has misunderstood, that we've explained very clearly that one has a duty to maintain one's body and the body of one's family members. I made it very clear, I hope no one has missed the point. I made it very clear that we have that duty that is stated right here in the verse. Jiveta, that is a principle also, but it is a subordinate principle. This is my point. I'm not negating that principle. But I am saying it is a secondary principle, that's all. To say that something is secondary does not negate it. You see? Doesn't negate it. Doesn't say that it's false, that it's meant to be negated. No. It simply means it is less important than something that is more important. So that which is more important is a tato brahma jigyasa, to inquire about the Absolute Truth. That is more important than earning one's living. So therefore, in our educational institutions, instead of just teaching the children only how to earn a living, they should also, and primarily, the first focus should be to teach them how to understand who they actually are. And they say, well, that's introducing religion. And this is, you know, and whereas we have separation of church and state, so we can't really do that. We have to teach our children to be atheists, and that way we can be happy. But not, where we, that doesn't work. When I was a kid, we prayed every morning. The whole school would pray, and there was no guns in the school. There was no drugs. There was no metal detectors. So they thought, well, we had a good idea, we're going to give our kids a better education, we're going to take prayer out of the school. We're going to, our wonderful Supreme Court there in Washington, from one lady here in Austin, Madeline O'Hare, she made a court case with the Supreme Court, and because of this one court case, the prayers were thrown out of the schools. They now were going to be a better country, the wonderful Supreme Court justices, and all their great learning and education. You see? Their great advanced consciousness that yes, this is not fair that the atheist should have to hear a prayer in the school. That 0.001% of atheists should have to hear a prayer in the school. That's not fair to them. That's discrimination. So we're going to discriminate against the 99.9999% who would prefer to hear a prayer and tell them they cannot have a prayer. But this is not even being democratic. According to the principle of democracy, whatever the majority wants, that's what goes. So the majority would have preferred to keep the prayer, but the minority were given the right that now you can have your way. The minority doesn't want to have God in education. So since the minority doesn't want to have God in education, therefore we will no longer have God in education. And they call that democracy. It's not even democracy. See, that's an undemocratic thing. When they took the prayers out of the public school, that was not democratic. That was some totalitarian decision made by the Supreme Court, actually. They acted in a very totalitarian way. They didn't act democratically. And they took prayer out of the public schools. So anyway, without prayer now, the children have to fill in with something. So they take drugs, they have premarital sex, and when they get tired of that, they bring guns and they shoot. Shoot the teachers, and they shoot each other, and they shoot themselves. See, this is the replacement. But our suggestion is, why don't you just bring God back? They say, but separation of church and state. But They don't understand what is the meaning of separation in church and state. It says there's a difference between church and religion. Church means a particular religious organization, right? There's the Presbyterian Church, the Baptist Church, this church, that church. It's different religious organizations. It's not that one particular religious organization should have a monopoly on religion in the country. That was the idea. The forefathers did not say separation of religion from state. They said church from state. There's a difference. You see, that the Supreme Court has not gotten it through their thick skulls. There's a difference between religion and church. There's two different meanings. Separation of church and state is what the forefathers said. They didn't say separation of religion from state. But they made the foolish decision of thinking, well, this means no more religion. We have to get out. Religion has to be put somewhere, hidden somewhere in a closet. But this is killing the human civilization. It's killing the human civilization. Religion has to be introduced at the very beginning in life. You see, the parents should be educating, the teachers should be educating. Not that they should promote one particular sect, but the universal principles of religion: cleanliness, austerity, mercy, truthfulness. That there is God. I am the servant of God. I'm meant to revive my loving relationship. Not that you have to call him Allah. You have to call him Krishna or Jehovah or Christ. But the principle of God, the universal principle of God, that has to be taught in the schools. That you can worship God according to your tradition, that is all right, but God conscious you must become. That should be given in the schools. That you must become God, you must become a lover of God. If you want to chant Allah or Krishna, it doesn't matter, but you must become a lover of God. That principle is beautiful. And you must become also, if you actually love God, then you must love His creatures also. If I love my next door neighbor, then I wouldn't think of harming his children, isn't it? My neighbor, Mr. Jones, if I love him, would I harm his children? No, of course not. In our modern day civilization, we say, I love God, and we harm God's children. We eat them, we kill them and eat them. His own children. His beloved children. You see? So this is going on. This madness is going on. So, back to Mataji was wondering, well, you mean you're down on earning a living? No. But the same time as you teach the children how to become competent for making a livelihood, you have to teach them how to become a lover of God. That is the first thing. First become lover of God, then livelihood. You see? That is proper education. That is proper balance in the society. If we can do that, the whole world will become peaceful and happy. So that we must introduce. Yes?
You mentioned that anything we do which is not giving a God consciousness, something is sin.
Yes, yes.
Could you just explain that a bit more? In the sense,
explain it further. Anything which is not connecting us with God, that is sinful. Yeah. Because it's separating us from God.
But in our day-to-day life, we don't do things which are...
Day-to-day life, you should always be connecting with God. Why not? It doesn't mean that your life... You say, well, I'm earning a livelihood. That's all right. So much energy, time, intelligence, some money spent on education to prepare myself. That's all right. So now you're maintaining your body. So now, now take that body and every morning you bow down to the Lord. Say, my dear Lord, I'm your eternal servant. Please engage me in your service. You see? You're maintaining your body. That's all right. Now take that body and use it in the Lord's service, whatever free time you have. Read the scriptures. Chant the holy names. Come to the temple, associate with the devotees, engage in seva. Whatever time you have free, you use that. You teach your children how to become lovers of God. You read to them from the scripture, from the wonderful Krishna story books, you see. In this way, you're maintaining your body, that's all right. Now, what will you do with that human body? you ever spare, whatever free time you have, when you're driving in the car, you can hear CDs of Krishna bhajans or lectures about Krishna, lectures about Bhagavad Gita. Fill up your 24 hours with Krishna consciousness as much as possible, and then your livelihood has meaning, because you're maintaining a... Here's the real thing. Turn your home into an ashram, a place of spiritual cultivation. And then, by paying your rent, you'll be supporting an ashram. You see? You're working hard to pay your rent. So make your home an ashram, a place of spiritual cultivation. You have an altar there. You offer all your food before eating. If there's any meat, fish, or eggs, throw them in the dumpster. And don't ever bring them back again. You see? Because God does not accept, Krishna does not accept meat, fish, and eggs. You offer fruits, vegetables, dairy products, and grains to the Lord with love and devotion. Whatever you eat should all be first offered to the Lord, and this way you're only taking prasad. Make your home into an ashram, and then all the hard work you're doing to pay your mortgage or to pay your rent, it becomes spiritualized. Because your home is now an ashram, a place of spiritual cultivation. You invite the devotees there to do the kirtan. You see? In this way, spiritualize your home, make it an ashram. And your body, you should use it to bow down to the Lord, to engage your tongue in chanting. You can decorate your body with tilak. In this way, spiritualize your body. So much work you're doing to feed your body and keep it alive, doctor visits and this and that. So you use your body for Krishna, for God. Be a real Hindu. Not a superficial Hindu, you see. Be a real Sanatana Dharmi, a follower of this Vedic culture. By engaging yourself 24 hours a day in Krishna consciousness, Vishnu consciousness, Ram consciousness, you see. In this way. Questions, Martin? Yes, Hari Singh.
There's with all this stuff going on in London.
If what? Was it?
With the London bombings and all this stuff.
What did he say?
The bombings that have happened.
Oh, the bombings.
Yeah. I hear there's a lot of talk going around about giving people tracker chips, like putting chips inside their body to keep track of everybody, make sure they're not terrorists, identify everybody.
Yes?
I heard one person talk about this chip, saying that the government engineered these chips to receive and transmit radio signals, to actually program. People have a chip to program their way of their mind and how they think.
Well, I think that if the Hare Krishna movement can take charge of the chips, it sounds very good. We will program everybody to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's very good. We will take charge of that technology.
But the thing is the folks who are taking charge of these chips are not really good people.
Ah.
They're bad.
Well, you have to make them devotees then. You have to turn the chip people into devotees. Make everyone Krishna conscious. There'll be no anxiety then. Mm-hmm.
But I know in the Christian world, they say that's the mark of the beast.
Christian world what?
The Christians say that's the mark of the beast.
Oh. The mark of the, they call this, what's the mark of the beast?
Chip
design.
The chip.
The chip is the mark of the beast. I thought they were calling our tilak the mark of the beast.
So you can't buy or sell. But apparently what they say is you want to go and buy something, you have to use a chip.
Oh, they're already doing it in Europe. You can have a chip for whenever you want to buy something. You just chip. It's like a credit card. It's already been introduced in Europe.
Yeah.
Shri Shri Radha Damodar Ki Jai. The thing is, in Krishna consciousness, we don't have to be in anxiety about anything. Because Krishna is the supreme controller. And if you put yourself directly under the protection of Krishna, then you're protected. That's a fact. So, we may have anxiety about the material society, but that we're feeling that great fear and paranoia, that means we haven't taken complete shelter of Krishna. Because nobody, not a blade of grass can move without the will of the Lord. So simply we have to become abhay, abhay charan. One who becomes, we become fearless by taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Krishna upatam. Mare Krishna rake ke, rake Krishna mare ke. If Krishna wants to kill you, nobody can protect you. And if Krishna wants to protect you, nobody can kill you. So just the way to become free of all anxiety is to take complete, total shelter of Krishna. And then you have no problems. No problems at all. Any more questions? Yes, Gaurav.
I read that you couldn't spear a tilak on in the middle.
What is it?
Well, here's the shape of tilak.
He's talking about the shape of the tilak.
The tilak.
Yes, and I read that you couldn't spear any in the middle, but...
What's the question?
In the middle?
You couldn't smear any in the middle, but when I saw Jagannath, when I saw a picture of Jagannath, I saw that he had something in the middle.
Is it this thing in the middle? You can't put it out there, but in Jagannath, you saw the picture, there is...
Something on Jagannath's forehead?
Yes.
You're wondering about... What is the question?
He's wondering if that dot cannot be in the tilak.
Oh, actually, this is our standard tilak. Why are you not? Actually, you can wear tilak. Your whole family, you can wear tilak when you come to the temple. But this tilak is this is our standard marking about for devotees. Jagannath may be decorated differently. He is God, but we are servants of God. We in a more simple way. We don't decorate ourselves so much like Jagannath is decorated. Simple way. We have learned from Prabhupada how to simple thing. This like this way with a tilak. And you can also wear tilak. Anyone who wants to wear tilak, we can inquire from our devotees how to obtain some of this very nice clay from India, and you can wear tilak when you come to the temple.
That's clay?
It's clay, yes.
Hmm?
What's his name?
Make things out of it. Can you make things out of it?
Oh, it's hard clay. It's not putty. It's like a rock. It's hard clay. You take some water in your hand, and we take the tilak and go like this, and then some comes out and becomes soft, and then you take like this and go like this. So it's very nice. This is called Vaishnava Tilak. We have some. Mataji is saying if you want Tilak, we have. We brought this from Vrindavan, India. It's very... This is actually our victory sign of conquering over death. Yeah.
When was Vrindavan rediscovered?
Vrindavan was rediscovered 500 years ago. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went there 500 years ago. And he pointed out the various places of Krishna's pastimes, and he asked his main followers, the six Goswamis, to remain in Vrindavan to write literatures and to further reveal the different holy places of pilgrimage. So before 500 years ago, the holy places of Vrindavan were practically speaking unknown. They were rediscovered 500 years ago by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya's movement was in Bengal. So after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rediscovered them, so many Bengalis, they came to Vrindavan. Yes.
In the beginning of the day, you mentioned that everyone is looking for happiness.
Yes.
Nobody is looking for Queen Kunti's prayers, we see that she is looking for more calamities to come. Queen Kunti.
More calamities?
I wish those calamities to come.
Kunti prays for more calamities.
What is it about? Oh, Kunti is praying for more calamities. Yes, because she wants happiness.
The calamity brings happiness.
Yeah, Kunti is on a very high level of realization. She's understanding that the more I have calamities, the more I can become happy. Because the more I have calamities, the more I will take shelter of Krishna, which will give me happiness. So, that is a very advanced position. And she's saying, if things become too comfortable, then I may forget Krishna, so better I'm kept in a very calamitous position. So I will be easy for me to remember Krishna. That's how she is thinking. Questions more? So, we're very happy you all have come tonight for this program. We have our programs every week here at the same time, same place, same nectar, Krishna Bhakti, reviving the original divine consciousness within. We have that spark of divinity, that divine consciousness within us, but at the present time, it is covered, that's all, because of so much contact with the material nature. So by coming to these programs, you're helping to revive them. So please come regularly and revive your dormant Krishna consciousness.
I was just saying that today is Mama Hari's appearance or birthday.
Vamana Hari's birthday today?
Yeah. And then Maliji has, his mother has sponsored the feast.
His mother is...
So we would like everybody to bless Vamana Hari. We'll have more kirtan. So everybody should sing loudly.
We'll have another kirtan now?
Please.
All right, and I to bless him on his birthday, we will have a little more kirtan now. Where's the madanga?
And everybody should chant loudly.
And here, take this garland. Krishna's blessings. May you have many more birthdays. And may this be your last birth in the material world. Krishna Pristaya Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta.